Hello and welcome to the Violin Geek Podcast. I'm your host, Laurel Thompson, and thank you for joining me. Happy New Year. I know it's a little funny to say that in February, but I've been waiting to get out this episode, Intonation Mastery number 4, and I know I've been promising it for a little while, so thanks for your patience. Things have been a little crazy around here. I can fill you in a bit in a moment, but first let me prep you for the episode so you can get excited about what we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to be covering some technical topics for hopefully getting you better in tune, more consistently and confidently in tune on your instrument, be that a violin, a viola, a cello, a bass, probably any non-fretted stringed instrument. And we'll also be covering a few listening considerations that we haven't really talked about yet. So stay tuned for all of that. And from my work with private students, I know that not all tips will work for every student. So I definitely invite you to pick and choose. And if something is working for you, that's awesome. If not, then you are welcome to just pass it along. Maybe to someone else, or maybe just pass on it. That is perfectly fine. It's sort of our learning journey, and we all need to find those tips and tricks that work for us and resonate with us along the way. And if this podcast is resonating with you, and if you've been enjoying the Violin Geek Podcast in general, I definitely would appreciate if you take a moment to rate and review the show. It helps other listeners find it. And it's also helpful when listeners share the podcast with others who may be interested in it. So really appreciate that promotion and that word of mouth. It really goes a long way. So before we dive into all of that, just a few odds and ends I wanted to mention here. As far as what's been going on with me, you might have read about or heard on the news about these atmospheric rivers hitting the California coast, mostly there in early January. It was just kind of this onslaught, and my county was pretty much at the center of that. So it was very hard to kind of keep up with life when we had downed trees kind of blocking our routes in and out of where we live. And thankfully, no flooding right on the property that I live on, but lots of neighboring towns and roads affected by that, and just pretty much constant power outages and internet outages here. We pretty much just had to evacuate to my parents' house. They live about an hour and a half away, so thankfully that was available, but just to be there to keep up with life and be able to keep teaching my students, and I had quite a few clients wanting some tracks for different recording projects and stuff. So when I could get back home, I was beelining for that, and unfortunately unable to do any podcasts or really anything else other than keep up with the situation. And I'll tell you, I have never checked the weather so many times in my life, or checked the power company or the internet provider's website so many times. It was becoming just this crazy obsession, really. And when you need all of that stuff and then it's not there for you, yeah, can really appreciate these things that we just kind of take for granted, right? And although it will take some time for the harder hit areas of the county and neighboring counties to recover, I suppose the silver lining in all of this is that although California technically is still within a drought state, this has helped. And if we can just get some gentle rain, maybe falling every night for the rest of the season, that's been my vision anyway, then we might be in a pretty good place to weather the next fire season, which unfortunately seems to be the polarity in California these days. It's either way too wet or way too dry. So think good thoughts for us. And I know a lot of other places in the world have been dealing with a lot of trauma and weather-related events. So my heart goes out to everyone in Syria and Turkey for the recent earthquake. And I know back east has been pretty intense with all of the snow and the cold. So take care of each other out there, and hopefully we'll get through all of this somehow. And unfortunately, I have some other not so wonderful news to share. You might remember a few years back, I interviewed Patty Kusturok, the Canadian Grandmaster Fiddle Champion. A couple weeks ago, she slipped and fell on the ice and broke her bowing arm. And that's just terrible news for a fiddler, of course. But when they did the x-ray, they found that she had some cancerous spots on some of her bones. But in any case, the good news is that it's likely to be curable. She will recover. But there's a long road ahead for her, and they've put together a GoFundMe. I will share that link in the show notes, and I encourage you to help her out if you have the means. Anything helps. In her situation, she's had to give up all of her gigs, all of her teaching, and she's just not sure for how long. So although they have just recently met their goal, I'm sure that any extra bits will help. So if you enjoyed that interview and you've enjoyed her music, please consider donating to that GoFundMe. And in better news, I have a new music video to share with you. The song Together Again, which is the intro and outro music you're hearing today, was a tune that Dan Frischette and I put out on our last album, After the Fire. And a few days before Christmas, we decided to go out and find a spot to finally make the music video we had been wanting to make for about a year, since we had had some friends and family and fans sending us these clips that we ended up putting at the end of the video of them representing being together again, whether that was with their family or with their pets or whatever. And we were just sort of sitting on this idea, but the moment struck us and we drove about an hour away and just sort of found this spot very spontaneously that looked like this beautiful summer day, but it was about 45 degrees out. My fingers were completely frozen by the end of the video recording process, but it was completely worth it. It's just a really gorgeous spot, and it's a song that we hope can just go out there and feel uplifting and inspiring. So please enjoy that, check it out. But for now, let's get on with our intonation mastery number 4. So in this episode, let's assume that we're not having trouble hearing the correct intonation. We covered some of those topics in previous episodes. Let's assume that we're hearing everything appropriately, and then we're still finding ourselves out of tune as we run through our pieces or when we listen back to a recording. What I often think at that point is we better look at our technique. And just a very obvious source of issue with intonation is that tension we can sometimes experience between the thumb and the index finger of the left hand. So if there's any sort of gripping here, it's going to be very hard for us to accomplish the next set of techniques that I'll be mentioning. But just in and of itself, it makes it very hard to, let's say, stretch for a fourth finger, so that's probably going to be flat. It makes it hard for us often to shift around the fingerboard quickly and quickly enough to be able to adjust the intonation in the moment. And we all know that we are adjusting our intonation. No one's actually perfectly playing in tune all of the time. With that excess tension, we're just not able to really react within the time frame that we need to, basically milliseconds, to make it sound as if we are playing in tune. So how do we address this tension? A quick place to look is your setup. So yes, if you use a shoulder rest, you're looking at the shoulder rest. If you don't use a shoulder rest, you're looking at the left hand and how it's supporting the instrument. I know there's a lot of people out there who say that they can support it just with the shoulder and the collarbone and the weight of the jaw, but either their bodies are completely different than mine, or they are actually supporting with the left hand. So that's a place to look. Really, even before that, to me, is the chin rest. And so many chin rests out there are not supportive. They don't help draw the violin or the viola into the body. And if you're on cello, of course, that's not an issue. Maybe it's the height of the end pin and the security of that end pin on the floor and whatever sort of rug or rock stop or whatever you're using. But we really have to make sure that we're not gripping because we feel like the instrument is going to fall. And if it is, if it feels very insecure, then that's where we need to back up to. And although that can feel very basic, like why would I ever have to go back to that, especially if we're a more advanced player, I think everyone's bodies also change over time. So just because we had a certain chin rest or shoulder rest situation when we were, say, a teenager, even into our 20s, and certainly if we're looking, you know, into our later years, our 50s, our 60s, our bodies will have changed, and it's something that everyone should probably revisit every few years just to make sure that it's really comfortable and it's not something that's adversely affecting our playing. Beyond setup, this tension can be very psychological. We can be afraid of dropping the instrument, probably more likely. However, we might just be anxious about playing and making a mistake, and that tension can show up in this gripping between the index finger and the thumb. If we have this tendency, we have to be very mindful. Also watch our fingertip pressure. Are we trying to squash the strings into the fingerboard? None of this is necessary. We can really play with a lot more ease. However, sometimes it is a violin or viola setup issue as well, and we have high action that can be making us feel like we need to be very aggressive with our finger placements, and then that snowballs into a tension in the thumb, and then that can snowball into that gripping with the index finger. So it's also worth maybe having someone check over your instrument, or maybe have your teacher play your instrument, especially if you're a beginner, because we just don't know at that stage what it's supposed to feel like. So making sure that we're not going to be fighting this instrument, and a lot of instruments that maybe we might pick up just out and about, you know, on eBay or something like that, may not be very well set up for playability, tunability, lots of different things. So good to go with a reputable dealer or violin shop for all of that. But honestly, dealing with the anxiety is probably the biggest factor with that particular gripping tension between those two fingers, in my experience working with students. And it's hard unless we can catch it right away. It's very difficult, probably one of the most difficult habits to break. I've seen this with students and encouraged them to try to go all the way to the other side and to play with such light fingers that it's just like this wispy, airy sound. And it's amazing how many can't do that. They can't play without full tone. And with full tone, we know that we're at least giving enough pressure, but maybe also too much pressure. It's really hard to tell unless we're in that body feeling that. And of course, if we're used to it, then how do we know any different? But just encouraging these students just to play with maybe 75% pressure just for a few minutes, just as an experiment to test out the theory. And it's really, really hard for them. They are just so used to holding things so tightly. Another exercise I've had students do in this situation is to hold the instrument like a guitar or ukulele and to sort of hang one of their fingertips, let's say maybe their second finger, fingertip over the left side of one of the strings, and then to just really hang into it and to hang on the thumb. And basically gravity is just pulling that base of the index finger down and away. And then to just feel how they can still sandwich the string down to the fingerboard, but then when we come up into playing position, it's almost even more direct how that sort of hook and hang approach is possible. And so we're using gravity to our advantage. And the third idea that I've used for that is also honestly teaching vibrato. We see very quickly that we're not going to be able to do vibrato if we have that grip between the index finger and thumb. The index finger needs to, at the very least, be able to brush by the neck. And we find a lot of those index fingers very sticky on the neck. They just don't want to move at all. So then for especially a student who's getting a bit more advanced and they're ready for vibrato anyway, then they can really see that this is a pattern that they need to address. Oftentimes that gives them, you know, enough motivation that they're willing to back up a little bit and maybe play some simpler pieces and really be mindful of what's going on in that left hand. Related to this issue is how we're setting up the frame of the hand. And so this is the balance between the first finger and the fourth finger within any finger pattern on any string. And a lot of the time we are very first finger centric. I know I've talked about this in the past, and my very earliest episodes dealt with the different finger patterns and setting up the frame of the hand. So you might want to revisit that or check out those episodes if you haven't yet. But making sure that we're not first finger centric, that we really have a balance between all of the knuckles of the left hand. They're all stretching a little bit, and particularly can we have the first finger feel like it's reaching back a little bit. Meanwhile, the fourth finger, which of course is the disadvantaged finger, can the fourth finger just reach up a little bit but not do all of the reaching, which unfortunately is how a lot of us set up that hand. And part of that is just that the pedagogy out there, a lot of it anyway, starts us off with open strings, which of course is a natural starting point so that we can develop good tone. But then we move on just one finger at a time from there. And instead, the approach that I like to take is really trying to set up that whole hand to make sure that we will have a pinky position that's gonna work for us in the long haul. So once we're sort of done with our initial tone exercises and we have a good violin setup or viola setup, we have a good bow hold, all of that good stuff, then that's really my next step with a beginning student, is that we really need to set up the frame of the hand. And it can work beautifully. There's really no reason why even a child can't be taught to play with the fourth finger from the beginning. And so that really sets us up for good intonation down the road, because then we're able to easily get to all of our fingers. It's like all of our fingers are ready to go. They're hovering, they're engaged, and we don't have these issues that are so common, like the pinky hanging down below the neck, or, you know, the fingers just sort of imbalanced where we sort of baby one finger over another. And if this is what we need to address in order to fix our intonation, then a great resource that I like is the first two pages of the Shrajak Etudes. And the rest of the book is fine too, but really just those first two pages where we're just going up and down the A string, and they just have it like in A major, but you could do all sorts of different finger patterns. Just backing up to something that's basic and will drill us on this new approach to our left hand. It's just crucial. Beyond that, you could also do some simple scales, you could do some simple folk songs, some fiddle tunes. Even if you're more advanced, I think there's benefit in just going back to basics and really going back to basics. So, you know, not trying to take some technique and play the Sibelius or something like that, even though maybe you can play that, but to really just go back to something where you're just allowing yourself to focus on the issue at hand, pun intended there, focusing on your left hand. Piggybacking on that is another topic which I rarely hear anyone talking about. Sometimes I just feel like maybe I'm the only one who's even thinking about it. Maybe other people think I'm crazy for even thinking about it. But the fact that we have a curved fingerboard, I think, is so crucial. If you take away one thing from this episode, I hope it's this. But if we think about it, if we set up that hand, let's talk about the frame of the hand, setting up on the G string and how those fingers relate to the G string compared to, let's go to the opposite end of the fingerboard, the E string. If we keep our elbow in that same spot to go to both of those strings, we are doing some really funky things with our wrist. We're also going to find that our fingertip placements, the spots on our fingertips where we're touching those strings, it's going to be a little bit different. And that frame of the hand that we were trying to set up so beautifully there, well, it's going to be different too. We're not going to be able to set up the same frame of the hand on the G and on the E with an arcing fingerboard if we keep our elbow in the same spot. So maybe it's because we can't really see our elbow that often underneath the violin or viola, but we need to be moving it around. And if we play cello, it's a different orientation, but it's the same situation where we need to be moving that elbow underneath the instrument, or in the case of the cello, to the left of the instrument. Same with bass. I just don't hear anyone talking about this, and I can't help but wonder why. It's kind of one of these mysteries that has always been with me. throughout my whole adulthood anyway. Yeah, maybe it's just common sense, but I see so many issues with this. People that are just doing just the weirdest stuff over there. So don't be one of those people. We can fix this, and we can fix our intonation through it. Because another issue, not only do we have these variety of setups once we just keep that tension there, but we're not getting the circulation into our left shoulder. It can be so critical for playing health. And as far as our intonation goes, we end up feeling like we have to stretch more for certain strings and positions, less for others, instead of having a basic consistency and a feeling of similarity with all of the strings in all the finger patterns. So we don't have to kind of reinvent ourselves each and every time we go to play a note. That is disaster for intonation. We have to have something we can rely on. So if you want to set this up for yourself and make sure you're doing it correctly, all you need to do is set up that frame of the hand, let's say on the E string. So we could first set the pinky to really baby the pinky there. Make sure the pinky's very happy. It's curved. We're reaching through the pinky knuckle all the way basically into the back of the hand. And then we'd reach the first finger back a little bit. And we could play through all four of those fingers just to tune them up a little bit, any finger pattern you like. And then we could lift those fingers, but keeping that exact same contour of the fingers. So basically keep all of the fingers in that same curvature and with the same relative spacing. And then can we transport those fingers down to the G string? And in order to do that, we're going to swing our elbow to the right. And so basically from the elbow up, everything is staying exactly the same, and we just transport those fingers across the fingerboard and we plop them right down on the G string. And we might just see a little peak of the elbow sticking out underneath our violin or viola if we look kind of over the edge. And that might feel kind of excessive, but again, we have an arcing fingerboard. We could also do this just simply by setting up on the G string, and then we get the frame of our hand, we get everything comfortable, and then we say, well, I want to go to the E string. So what are we going to do? We're going to swing our elbow to the left and transport those fingers right across without changing anything other than that upper arm and elbow position. It's really as simple as that, and I just don't know why it's missing in so much instruction. It seems like just something obvious that we would want to mention, as not only does it create that consistency that we need in those fingertip placements and spacing that we need for our intonation, but it also helps us release that tension I was talking about earlier between the thumb and the forefinger. You basically can't have that tension if you're doing this elbow swing that I'm talking about. And it doesn't need to be excessive, just what's comfortable and what allows us to, again, have that same curvature of fingers from string to string. So we're just never stretching further to, say, go to the G string, or we're having to just really curl up onto our fingertips to go on the E. And then, of course, D and A are somewhere in between. It really can be much more consistent. And then through that, our intonation can be much more consistent. And finally, for something technical that might be related to intonation issues, I find that bow pressure is another one that people don't think about too often. But I've had students, particularly beginners, use a little bit too much pressure. If they're not really listening to the tone, they notice that their intonation is going flat. And I say, why is this happening? And they look over at their left hand. But of course, I'm listening to the tone as well. And I heard that it was maybe not getting to the point of a crunch, but it was sounding pretty squashed. And I say, well, let's just lighten up on that bow and see if that fixes it. And then we can worry about the left hand from there. And sure enough, a lot of the time, it might actually be the bow. So if we're squashing the sound, like literally squashing the sound underneath a heavy bow, then we will lose all of these beautiful overtones and resonances and instead be left with this just sort of flat sound, dull sound. And so that's another thing to think about with intonation, particularly flat intonation, is am I using too heavy of a bow? Am I too heavy-handed on this right side? And sometimes even before the obvious crunch of a heavy bow, it will affect our intonation. So be mindful of that. It's another little trick there that probably won't help that many of you, but could help some of you a lot. And so now some listening considerations. In the earlier episodes, I talked about tuning against open strings, using drones, using sympathetic resonances. Definitely go back and listen to the other episodes in this series for that, and I'll link to them in the show notes. But when we are tuning against something, and we talked a little bit about tuning to a 440 last time versus some other A, but in all of these different situations, we need to recognize that there is a certain gravitational pull within a scale, within a key. If we're trying to use more of like a tempered tuning system, then it might not work for all situations. And vice versa, if we're using more of an expressive intonation style, it might not work for all situations. So let me clarify this. Basically, tempered tuning takes the octave and divides it into equal half steps. And this is what a piano uses. This is what most instruments use that aren't non-fretted instruments. So if we're talking about a guitar, if we're talking about just any instrument where we don't really have control over the intonation, then it's likely a tempered instrument. And so if you think about all the instruments out there, it really is mostly just the violin family instruments that have this ability to create intonation. And of course, this is also what makes it so challenging. But the really neat thing about that is that we can express ourselves a little bit more thoroughly by using this sort of gravitational pull I'm talking about. So if we were to sing a scale, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, and we just get to T and we stop there, all of us have heard enough music and enjoyed enough music and listened to enough music that we are going to want to resolve that seventh note of the scale up to the octave. It just has this magnetic gravitational pull up to that note. And so we could exaggerate that a little bit, assuming the situation's right, where we actually, let's say it's a C sharp going up to a D, and we could make that C sharp just a little bit more sharp. And then it would just sound like it's pulling itself even a little bit more towards that D note. And if we're listening, we're doing this all the time, actually. However, if then we go and we look at a tuner, then the tuner would say that we're sharp, and then that can throw us off. And then we start to look for that tempered tune C sharp, which may honestly not sound great within our piece. It really depends on how dense the harmonies are. If we're just playing by ourselves, then there's no real density unless we're playing double stops or against a drone, in which case we would want to use a more tempered system. But if it's just a pure melody line, then we're going to feel that maybe that C sharp needs to be a little on the higher side. Similarly, in the key of D would be the F sharp. Do, re, mi. Mi really wants to resolve up to the fourth note of the scale. It has that same magnetic pull. Our ear hears that note even before we play it, and it says, let's go there. If we were in a minor key, then it would be different. We would be playing that flatted third note of the scale. But for any major key, it's always going to be that third note that maybe we want to keep a little higher, and that seventh note that we want to keep a little bit higher. And we could talk about all the notes, all the degrees of the scale, and maybe we'll do that in a future episode, but they all relate to each other. And within that scale, there's a certain almost journey that we're on. And certainly by that seventh note, we really, really want to resolve. And if it's a little on the flatter side, which might be more of like a tempered system, then flatter compared to the sharper that we're talking about, of course, then it might not sound correct to us. And then again, we look at our tuner, but it says one thing and we're hearing another thing, and we can get very confused with all of this. And so the moral of this story might be, don't always trust your tuner. Trust it sometimes, not always. Take it with a grain of salt. And follow your ear above all else, because you will be in both of these situations frequently on this instrument. There will be many situations where you might need to play that C sharp we've been talking about a little on the flatter side because you're playing it against an open E, or you're playing it against a dense piano accompaniment. And there'll be plenty of situations where C sharp is not the leading tone or any particular tone that needs to be on the sharper side to lead up to anything. Maybe you're in the key of B and it's just the second note of the scale, which generally needs to be sort of just dead on. And so playing that same C sharp that you were playing in the earlier piece in D may not sound appropriate. And so we always need to be a little bit flexible, and a practice exploring microtones may be very beneficial, where we might start with that C sharp and then we just rock back ever so slightly, and then we rock up ever so slightly, and we really experience the range of pitch that can come just by moving so incrementally on the string. This is a great exercise as well for vibrato and fine-tuning that ability to listen to those very close pitches, as well as just talking about intonation here, being able to have fingertips that are flexible enough that they're able to adjust in just this very minute way and get us into tune if we just need to adjust a little bit. A lot of times we're drawn to more just like slide around, at least in the beginning when we're first starting and we hear something out of tune. But a lot of times it's just a matter of just rocking the fingertip ever so slightly. It's almost just like we're leaning one way or the other. And then we hear this incredibly different pitch and we think, wow, that's a lot, but I barely moved. So just exploring maybe a scale that way, or just some different notes on different fingers, on different strings, just to make sure that you're sort of revved up in your fingertips and ready to adjust at a moment's notice. It's a great practice, and we might worry about how that might train us to play out of tune, but as you might be realizing through this chat, it's tuning is not really set in stone. And if it sounds right to us, and if it sounds right to our audience, if it sounds right to our accompanist, if it just sounds right, then it really doesn't matter what the tuner says. And we need to be flexible and we need to be able to adjust. And that's adjusting our ears, adjusting our technique. And so a lot of what I'm sharing with you today, I feel like a big overall umbrella topic is, let's adjust. Let's make this fluid. We talked about the tension. We talked about the frame of the hand. We talked about that elbow swing and that bow pressure. And now we've been talking about this sort of magnetic pull towards certain notes of the scale versus others, and exploring microtones. So I think in thinking about intonation, a lot of times we think of it sort of as maybe like a math problem where there's a right or a wrong answer, but it's really not like that at all. If you go away with anything other than let's swing the elbow underneath the instrument, maybe it's just that let's explore this and let's really listen deep and let's get flexible with it and let's make adjustments and learn to adjust on the fly so that we are always able to save every moment. Then that takes out so much stress. All that stress of I need to be perfectly in tune, I need to get the right answer every single time, it's just gone. And that is so freeing. It really frees us up to be artists. I'll tell you one last story here before we wrap up, which it was another Dan and Laurel album a few years back. And there was this one note in this solo that I played. It was a little out of tune and I sat with it. We took the tracks home and I wanted to go back in and fix that one note. But the more I listened to it, the more that note made sense, just melodically within that solo. And it was sort of that expressive tuning I've been talking about. It really wasn't. It had nothing to do with that key signature I was in, but there was something a little bit maybe bluesy about it, or something that just, it really expressed something. And I decided to keep it. And every time I hear it come around in that song, I kind of smile. Because it was me being an artist making a choice to leave that note just like it was, because I was feeling it in that moment. And even though a tuner would say it's out of tune, it fit in with everything surrounding it, the melodies, the harmonies. Nothing was dissonant. It made sense. So thank you so much for listening. I hope all of this makes sense. Please send me an email if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions. I'm at Laurel at laurelthompson.com. That's L-A-U-R-E-L at L-A-U-R-E-L-T-H-O-M-S-E-N. Laurel at laurelthompson.com. You can, of course, check out my website, laurelthompson.com. I will have these links in the show notes. And if you are enjoying the Violin Geek podcast, you might also enjoy my Violin Geek blog, which has actually been going even longer than the podcast. Since my last podcast episode, I put out a blog post answering a teacher question about whether or not we should force our students to memorize. So that's an interesting topic to go check out, and a very difficult topic, one that I think we all need to consider whether or not we're a teacher or we're a student. And there's some tips in there for how to better memorize, as well as maybe just how do we approach that so that it's not something that is as stressful as this poor teacher student was feeling it was. So you can check that out if you go to my website and then click the Violin Geek tab, and under that you'll just see the blog tab. And if you are a teacher or a parent or a student and you have a question that you'd like me to take a stab at, I can't guarantee that I'll turn it into a blog or a podcast episode, but I do respond to all my emails. And it's always interesting for me to mull over these different questions, so I do appreciate those. I have some interviews coming up shortly that I'm looking forward to sharing with you. But next month, I plan to release an episode talking about different career paths for musicians. And this was another student question. This was from one of my students, actually. And we spent the better part of a lesson recently talking about all the different avenues that we could take our violin playing. And I thought, this was good. This was a great brainstorm, and I think other people might be interested to hear more of this. We came up with some interesting ones. So please look forward to that, and until next time, happy practicing.